Hey everybody, it's Joe Trippi and welcome back to That Trippi Show. Tons to get to today, too much to fit into one episode, so instead we're going to zoom out and talk big picture. Many of you have asked, what does the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade mean for the midterms? Are the committee hearings breaking through? Is there positive momentum for Democrats? To talk about all this today, Alex and I wanted to bring back our good friend Paul Maslin, who, oh gosh, we've worked on several campaigns. Paul, I think, is one of the best pollsters in America, and he worked was instrumental in developing the messaging for Doug Jones' historic upset campaign in 2017 in that special election that Doug won. Paul, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Joe. Interesting times, aren't they?
Yeah, they sure are. Alex, where do you want to get started here?
This is not a football podcast, Paul. Otherwise, we'd have a lot to talk about. So I think we got to start with the big question. And this is something that the three of us have been talking about quite a bit. What is the impact of Roe versus Wade's overturning by the Supreme Court in the Dobbs decision? What is that going to be on the midterms, guys?
I'll take it in quickly in three different pieces. I think it's the first time I've seen an indication that our base could be as mobilized and set up and jazzed up for an election as theirs. Everything prior to this has suggested that, you know, the classic midterm form, the party out of power is the one that's aggrieved and they're the ones that are the most intense. And we've seen that in some of the primary voting, although you never want to draw too many conclusions about primaries versus a general election, but you saw it last year in Virginia and all the rest of it. And I'll tell you, in the wake, and again, we're just a week into this, but in the wake of the Supreme Court decision, I have seen a tremendous uptick of interest all of a sudden in the election among progressives, among Democrats. So that would be number one. Second thing is that I think that it absolutely creates a fault line that it will cause significant difficulty. How long lasting and how much it costs for them to repair it, the Republicans, but it's going to cause significant difficulty with Republican women, with independents, moderate and moderate to liberal independents and whatever Republicans are left, you know, that they desperately need in this election. And I have already seen movement toward our candidates. And that also it's also going to apply, I think, to millennials. So it creates a real significant electoral problem for them in the middle of the electorate, as well as with our base. And the third thing I would say is, and this is the confluence of events, I think, with the hearings as well. This is a weird election year for all kinds of reasons. I just came out of the field somewhere, Joe, where, and Alex, where right direction, wrong track is at 8% for the country. That single digits, that I have never seen that before in 40 years. And it's led me to this conclusion. I don't want to discount, yes, Joe Biden's unpopular, the Democrats are in power, I get it. Everybody in this country has a reason to be upset about something. Everybody does. Everybody has somebody that they're afraid of or angry at, or, you know, that is somehow afflicting them so that they think things don't work in all kinds of different directions. And that Venn diagram between Democrats and Republicans rarely intersects, and even with independents, only in certain ways. So we're all upset, but now perhaps the stakes get raised in a way that our side's upset, our fear about what is this court has already done, what the future court could do, what is happening on the electoral front in terms of democracy. All those lines start to intersect, and this becomes a tremendously big stake election where it is not simply about candidate A versus candidate B, but what is in fact the balance of this country and who's going to control it and what does that mean? And I just think the last week has changed the ante dramatically.
You know, Paul, you're starting to see that too, though, in the generic polls that have come out recently, where all of a sudden Democrats, you know, the Marist poll had Democrats at 48, generic D at 48, Republicans at 41. And there were several of them. It was the Morning Consult, the YouGov poll, and also the split pro-choice Dem versus pro-life R is 47-32. So you're seeing that, you know, again, way too early to know.
Right.
And the other thing we do know, too, is that it, like in 10 days, something else could be totally blowing up.
Yeah.
But I think what you're saying is true. You can feel sort of like the trend here of this becoming a very high stakes election, not just sort of the usual, you know, where they can get by with petty cultural attacks that distract everybody. The new shiny object, I don't think, is going to work as well.
And no one's going to deny that inflation and the economy don't matter in this election. Of course they do, or that crime doesn't matter in some cases, or immigration, or all the normal, you know, essentially the issues the Republicans were planning to run on. They're still significant. But I don't think, you know, you made a very good point, Joe. We've all been trained to say, well, that's just, you know, the politics of the moment or the story of the moment, and we move on. We've seen that with Trump repeatedly, including the most classic example, obviously, with the Billy Bush tape in 2016. And then, you know, we think it's definitive and it's not. But I do think that when you're talking about 50 years and fundamental rights being taken away and the chaos that has now been created, that's the other thing that will linger. It's not simply that the Supreme Court made a decision. It's that we're now broken into half, and some states do this and some states do that, and some women and potentially children are going to be suffering and others are better off. And how does that shake out? And I think it's going to be chaotic. And I think the blame will come primarily at this conservative movement and what have they done. And a lot of people never expected this was going to happen. Even 2 or 3 months ago, before the Alito decision was leaked, they still didn't think it was going to happen.
Well, even after was leaked, that people still, the denial of knowing what was coming, you know, it was still a shock when it actually happened. I think people, and a lot of the women I talked to, you know, are just, even though they knew it was coming, the fact that it happened, there was still like a lot of pain, a lot of anger, a lot of fear that was caused by it. But you look at like the new poll in Georgia, we know Biden's numbers, approval rating is really low. But Warnock's ahead 54-44 against Herschel Walker. That can't be, I mean, these numbers that we're starting to see, even the generic numbers I talked about a few minutes ago, those are all numbers where Dems have gone ahead on generic, you know, congressional,
right,
with Biden's numbers being where they're at. And I'm not sure, I'm not sure we're seeing peak whatever this is yet, because we are only a week into, you know, week or so into it.
And again, it's like every bit of political science background I have and every bit of campaign experience that we've all had in many of these midterm elections, when we've seen, you know, obviously the first Clinton midterm was the shock of the Democrats losing the Congress, and then Obama with Obamacare, and again we lost that, we lost substantially in the House. We've all seen these trends, and we've all been conditioned to say president unpopular midterm is a disaster for he and his party. I have a feeling that we've jumped a shark here, though, and that we're in a very different paradigm where, as I said, everybody is mad. There's nobody defending any flag, right? Everybody's mad about something. And it may come down this November to which side is more fearful of the other. And, you know, and what it would mean for the other to either retain power or to gain power. And that may end up becoming the key factor. And I think, you know, a reasonable person would have to say right now, that's a really close call. It's not definitive at all that it's the Republicans or the conservatives are the ones that are going to be the most upset.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think, well, so where do you put the hearings in all of this? I know you said that you think in your, you know, that it's having an impact. You're seeing, I think, some, even a lot of Trump supporters starting to, not that they don't support him anymore, but they're saying things like, well, I hope he doesn't run, you know, that kind of stuff.
I think that there's two things I know for certain, and there's a third that I have a question about, and I think we're going to have to see how it plays out. What I know for certain is prior to Roe, the number one issue among the Democratic base across this country was the question of democracy and the threat to democracy. And so the hearings have only, and there were, by the way, a lot of people in DC and a lot of our consultant chattering class, Joe, that you and I know so well, were in denial about that for a lot of the last year, year and a half. But clearly it's been there and it's been the top concern.
Right.
Now, it may very well be that abortion and choice in the wake of Roe may rise to the level or even supplant it, who knows, but it's been number one. And the hearings only, I think, you know, intensify that feeling. I don't think it is only choice that has all of a sudden produced this big change in terms of engagement on the Democratic side. I think the whole question of January 6th and the hearings and you know are also contributing. So that's one thing. Second thing I also believe is I do think I don't pretend to be an expert about Republican primary voters or all of that dynamic. We, you know, we have enough time trouble with our own party.
Right.
Having said that, I think this is the beginning of the end for him. And whether it's exactly how it happens, whether it's partly because of a criminal indictment or whether it's partly because of, you know, Ron DeSantis or somebody coming out of the woodwork and just saying enough is enough and people sort of saying to themselves, I think he's right or they're right. But I no longer expect, even though he, in the irony, you know, brutal irony way, he would be our easiest opponent to defeat in 2024. I don't expect that Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee. I'm not totally sure he'll be a candidate. What I don't know, Joe, is the middle. Is the middle going to say, we're sick of this whole story and why won't people move on? And, you know, and whereas, you know, abortion could be somebody's rights, could be affecting them personally. There's still a lot of people that while they shudder about the whole thing, they're disgusted by it, they also see it in a partisan light and, you know, and wish somehow that we could just put it behind us. So I don't know whether politically with the middle of the electorate, it still has the same force. But I don't, like I said, I don't know. It could also be a major factor in terms of November elections, not simply energizing the Democratic base.
Well, I think it's highlighting the extremism of the MAGA movement, you know, which is also exacerbated then by the court going to these extremes on Roe v. Wade and, you know, and the other things that they've been ruling on, guns, et cetera. So I think there's like I think right now we're in a place where the party that it's sort of your a different take than yours on who do they fear the most. I think who they fear the most is their extreme elements in both parties, they think. And the one that's going to the furthest extreme, the one that's doing the most extreme things is the one that's going to, you know, create the bigger problem for that party. Right now, that's, I think, clearly showing up is a big problem for Republicans in 2022.
We're involved in the Wisconsin Senate race. And, you know, you've seen this incredible, almost comic display of Ron Johnson running away from every single person trying to ask him about this fake elector scheme. And believe me, that is not a positive for his reelection campaign. So from that standpoint, you know, I think it's got to be worrisome over there. And again, they also have, they've been able, to their credit, we all can wax a lot about the flaws of our democratic and electoral system, which were our legion. But one of the things we've seen, you know, in the era of Trump is that the conservatives hold together extremely well. They're very disciplined. You know, they avoid people straying from the reservation, even under the most duress. But they're being tested like never before now, because it's maybe a very silent minority, but there is a group of people on their side of the ledger that are just horrified by both of these developments, or by at least one of them. And that's going to cause some pressure and some strain in terms of producing a vote in November.
So I don't want to out whatever state was the 8% state that you talked about on the right track, wrong track question. But Is there some place, I mean, I don't want to pin down you down in Wisconsin, but have you, because I know you're in the field in a lot of places. So is there an example of a shift, not the names or anything, but that something you've seen in the last week that gives you this confidence, or that you're seeing some pattern?
Yeah, what I would say is I've already seen evidence of a combination of Republican women, independent women, millennials, college-educated voters, suburban voters moving significantly. And again, that's immediate. Does that hold in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month? Does it hold in 3 months when they get inundated with messaging about, you know, all the issues we know that the conservatives are going to play at, and you know, remains to be seen. But it's not nothing.
To that point, you know, you mentioned kind of the general, but looking at Democrats for a second, one of the questions that we've seen a lot of is, how do we make this stick? I know you said earlier that Democrats are getting more enthusiastic, and that was a big problem in most of the ballots you'd see. And I think we all know we're facing a much more enthusiastic Republican electorate, and hopefully that's changing. But the idea that even really before this gets to the hearings, are the hearings breaking through in a way that you think will be meaningful? One of the things that Joe and I talked about probably 2 months ago was a poll of Democratic voters had it was really low. It was only like 1 in 4 thought our democracy was seriously under threat. Have you seen that shift?
I think we can compare. The problem is you start comparing a poll versus a poll versus a poll. I will simply say, Alex, that when we ask a group of issues, sometimes it's 4 or 5 issues, sometimes it's 7 or 8, and they have all the normal, you know, suspects in there. There's healthcare is going to be in there, and inflation's in there, and the economy, and we've had choice, and we've had guns occasionally, and we put immigration in there, and you just put them all together. Among base Democratic voters, the threat to democracy has been number one, or at the least number two, for months, even before the hearings really kicked in major gear. So it has been there as a real issue among our base from the get-go. And I don't think that's going to change. And I think that is a unique, you know, we've never had democracy itself on the ballot. And none of us really know what does that mean in terms of extra turnout, extra intensity. I know that, for example, I'll give you one case. In the end of, remember 2000 and what was the re-election year for Obama? 2012, right?
Right, yep.
And there were some concerns about turnout in some of the key states. He came to Wisconsin, where I was living at the time, and I've lived for 20 years. He came to Wisconsin 3 times in the last week, twice to Milwaukee and once to Madison. And on all 3 times, he started talking about the Republicans trying to take away your right to vote and voter suppression. And, you know, and I don't remember, Joe, what was the specific impetus for it back then, but he mentioned it all 3 times in a very overt fashion. Obviously, the messaging we never really got in 2016 that had any impact, you know, and I'm not blaming him or Hillary. I'm just saying it never happened.
Right.
And boy, did that produce extra turnout and extra votes. And this is now not isolated to one particular group or another. This is given what they have stated publicly, what some of their candidates, many of their candidates are claiming, what the people that are trying to get control of Secretary of State's offices or governors or working with legislatures say they could do in the future. We've never had a test of democracy on the ballot like this before. And I don't want to exaggerate the impact, because yeah, there's still a bunch of other issues that really matter to people that affect their day-to-day lives, but we've never had this kind of focus before. And I'm a fool if I say I can predict exactly what the electoral impact will be in November, except to say I think it's going to be something.
I just see it growing, not because I mean the hearings are going to continue. I think we're each time stunned by new revelations. I mean, it's clear that where the Cipollone testifies. Or, I mean, in other words, I just don't see it. I think more and more people are. It's getting harder to avoid the news. I mean, about what this is and what actually happened, and I think so that number of people where it seeps in, how close we came, I think is only going to grow between now and November. And so I don't see it dissipating is what I'm saying. It may not be overriding, but I still think it's going to have a big impact.
And I think unlike a Virginia governor's race where a youngkin can basically kind of keep himself at arm's length and sort of, legitimately get away with it in terms of Trump, this time the combination of the sycophancy here, of the fact that he's still looming on the horizon, the fact that this is a nationalized election now. Isn't it ironic, by the way, Joe? We're the ones that used to hate having national elections, right?
Exactly.
We're the ones who always wanted to go local and state and don't nationalize it, right? I mean, that I can't tell you how many meetings I've been in, where we either, try to avoid it or bemoan the fact that that's what's happening. Well, guess what, baby? We want a nationalized election this November, big time. And I just think that changes everything. Again, I think a whole lot of people, we all are really good at looking at the mirror and looking back to the past and saying, well, this is the way it's always been. And how many times have we been shocked in the last 3, 4, 5 years about our politics and how it isn't all the way it's always been.
Always been, yeah, exactly.
And we may be in for another one. I mean, I will say, I just said to a reporter friend of mine, a retired reporter friend of mine last night, I said, if it weren't for the gerrymandering aspect of, essentially the House races and what's happened, I'm not talking about this year, I'm talking about what they've laid, the way they've laid the waste to the whole system, and created these districts where you literally can't possibly lose. What they've done prior to 2022.
Right.
But if it weren't for that, I mean, I'd be on the verge of saying, I think this could be a Democratic victory, not just mitigating losses, but it could actually be a Democratic victory this November in the face of all of the indicators that would tell us it shouldn't be.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing in a place where everybody's angry at everybody. And, the whole way you laid this conversation out from the beginning with the 8% right track. God, that's stunning. Single digits. But it is that when they know that if they can funnel all that into a referendum on Joe Biden.
Right.
If that's what 2022 is about, if that's what they can succeed in making it about, that's why every other week they have another outrage.
Right.
No matter what he does, and inflation, screaming that to the wind, and it's important. So I'm not putting that aside, but that's their goal. And the reality is, we want to nationalize this, or we hope for a national, nationalizing the race along this extreme MAGA party and what it's and democracy, right? I mean, if that's what the case is, I'm not even sure I'm not even sure, because in these marginal House seats, I mean, the ones that are going to actually decide that, I'm not sure they win that fight there. I mean, I think we can hold the House. I mean, I think we could. I definitely think we've got an excellent chance right now at gaining seats in the Senate, but I think we may all be very surprised at how strong Democrats do, even with the redistricting, and that's clearly a big impediment. So I'm not putting, I'm not discounting it, but I think it's possible.
Of course, 4 months is a long time, and the news cycles are news cycles, but this Supreme Court decision is not a small deal. And these hearings into what they really were about last January 6th is not a small deal. Now, we could all argue what might happen if, in fact, the Justice Department finally acts. And we don't know. We're in uncharted territory there, too.
Yeah.
Paul, 4 months is a long way away. we don't know what's still coming from the committee. We don't know what's coming with an indictment potentially. Joe, how do we make this stick? How do we not lose this momentum between now and election day?
Well, I think no matter how those things go, the reality is, and you're seeing this already, I still think the other problem they have is their party does have a big split in it. I mean, I think now of people who think they don't want Trump to continue leading the party. They're looking elsewhere. I mean, you have the whole Rhino Trump fighting everybody and his people winning these nominations. So, the Warnock race with Herschel Walker is a prime example of this, right? I mean, that should be a race, it's going to be a tough fight for Warnock. I don't want to belittle that, but the fact is they're going to be, they've gone and nominated a MAGA nutcase in that race that actually makes it possible for Warnock to win, particularly as, again, what Paul and I have been talking about with you, in terms of when that's exacerbated by, look at what the court's doing, look at what Trump did on January 6th that we didn't know about. I mean, all these things, I think, are just sort of feeding into a big problem for them on a whole bunch of different fault lines, including people who will be upset that Trump is being cast aside. I mean, you look at the new poll, that poll in New Hampshire where DeSantis has pulled into the lead. There are going to be a lot of MAGA folks that aren't happy about that. Some of them really like DeSantis too, but I think there's a real fault line. There's several fault lines, but beyond the ones even Paul talked about at the very beginning of the podcast.
And let's not forget that, I mean, the simple fact that Warnock is there and that we hold the majority and that the Senate became 50-50 and we got the majority because of the deciding vote from Kamala Harris was because of there was a huge schism in Georgia on this very thing between the Trumpers and the non-Trumpers, and Trump ultimately put his hands in the air and said, I can't support these people. And it created this problem. And whichever side of that equation you're on, if those things get split because of real events, political or judicial, over the next 4 months, it will absolutely create problems for them. I mean, they'd like everything to be all nice and compact. We don't like Joe Biden. We are upset about gas prices. We think crime's out of control. Immigration has been mishandled. Vote for us. And it may not be so simple.
No, you're already seeing a lot of these candidates. After the hearings have gone, all those people that were banging the drum about for the big lie, they're suddenly starting to become very quiet as candidates. They're not talking about that anymore. So the more the hearings go, and then the question is, well, how come you're not defending Trump? I mean, this is what I'm trying to say. I mean, there's going to be some real schisms where people are going to be demanding that they stand up and defend their guy. And a lot of these people are not going to do it anymore. And that could depress their turnout. I mean, I just think there's other things going on that both the hearings and Roe have, the court decision, we're seeing signs of intensity changing and moving around and votes moving. But I'm not sure that, this early on, we even understand how the big the impact could be. And it could be a lot. It could be really big.
So got one more, and Paul, you're going to laugh at this one. It's kind of out of left field, but Navigator, which everyone should sign up for that newsletter, released a poll last week and saying that by a 30-point margin, Americans support getting rid of the Electoral College for presidential elections so the candidate with the most votes nationally always wins. It was 58 support, 28 oppose. The interesting thing about that is
they've been my client, by the way. I've worked for National Popular Vote for over a decade. Go ahead.
The swing in Republicans
in
that poll.
So you're doing these polls?
No, I didn't do that poll, I've been on the side of getting rid of the Electoral College for over a decade now.
Okay.
Well, the interesting thing from this poll is that it's not just Democrats anymore. It's Republicans were, I think it was like underwater by 20 points. It was this bowl had them as plus one. You guys read anything into that?
Well, I think it's two things. One, it's just one more example of the horrible dysfunction of our institutions that permeates everything. And why wouldn't the Electoral College be part of that? And then secondly, I mean, I think there's some American people aren't dumb. I mean, they're actually look at the what we've created here and the chaos that has become created, and the fact that, you know, some clown running for Secretary of State in some state, you know, might actually determine, you know, against the will of the people, the American people, supposedly the greatest democracy on earth, could determine who becomes the leader of the free world. I mean, that is actually what the ludicrous nature of where we are. The problem, however, though, Alex, in very real terms, is you're not going to convince state legislators in, you know, there's a compact that could be passed that would do it. It wouldn't take a constitutional amendment. There's a compact of states that if enough states agreed, that if we're all on board with this, that the winner of the popular vote becomes president, they get our electoral votes, it's done. But you're never going to see it as long as the Republicans decide that's not in their interest. And so that's still the problem. And it would be true for a constitutional amendment, obviously, even more dramatically, because you need the higher threshold.
It's never going to be in their interest to get rid of the electoral college.
And not right now, it's not.
No. So that it's another one of those where, you know, a large majority of the American people are for it, but that's not going to happen. Same with Roe v. Wade, right? I mean, big majorities. Support it, did not want to see it thrown out, didn't matter. Court did what it did. The same thing's going to happen on the Electoral College if it ever got to, you know. But most Americans, you know, get that, you know, exactly what Paul said, that, you know, it's that I think the thing that's happened is until the last few elections, most Americans didn't know what that the Electoral College could be, this kind of a decider, and that one state, one bad apple, one bad Secretary of State could do something. They get that now.
Or one mob that got to a vice president and told him backed by a Supreme Court. I mean, you know, we all understand the scenarios here, and what seemed like a poorly written political novel 20 years ago now looks like real life to us. But you know, I mean, I guess the one I would end it on this, Alex, which is the scary thing for us, is of course we try to be optimists, and we're in the middle of a campaign cycle, and it's like we can get our vote out and people are reacting, you know, it gets into your bloodstream and you just start feeling that this can all happen and isn't this wonderful. What if significant parts of our electorate essentially make a decision that they can't achieve anything, it's not worth it, it's all a waste, and they disappear and from the voting process, and then God help us.
Well, that's what they're counting on.
That's right.
I mean, the whole thing with authoritarian movements is to exhaust people, until you give up. But interestingly, you know, that's what I see as big hope here going into the July 4th weekend, is that you're starting to see that things they did, I think, believing people were too exhausted or ready to throw in the towel, is actually energizing in time to create the kind of energy needed in November of 2022. To stop the direction the authoritarian, that Trump and these guys were trying to take us in. That's what we got to hope for. That's what we got to fight for. Thanks, Paul, for coming on. And thanks, everyone, for listening to That Trippy Show. Hope everyone has a great 4th of July weekend. We'll be back next week. And of course, please subscribe to That Trippy Show and leave a review on Apple or wherever you listen. You can always send us a question to thattrippyshow@gmail.com or leave us a question in a review on iTunes. Paul, thanks a lot for being with us. Really insightful. Thank you.
Anytime, Joe.